It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to @LeachReport or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello from Jacksonville. Welcome into our Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Buckle up. Keep your fingers crossed. We had a flawless day, technically, on Wednesday down here. And at the other end of the spectrum yesterday, as I told Shannon off the air a moment ago, you bat 500 in baseball, you get to the Hall of Fame. In radio, it's not so good. So we're going for two-thirds today, 667 percentage, with hopefully another flawless show technically. Can't promise about the flawlessness otherwise, but glad you are on board with us today. Coming up, Mike DeCourcy, of course, will join us, as he does on Fridays. Lots to talk about with the columnist from the Sporting News. And Scott Padgett, the former Wildcat star, will be with us. He coaches at Samford, and Samford plays in the Southern Conference with Wofford. So we'll get some insight into the Terriers from Scott. And our guest lineup is presented by Sleep Outfitters. Kentucky advances to play Wofford with an easy win last night over Abilene Christian, 79-44. I think the third fewest points going back to like 99. West Virginia scored 39 in 2015. Miami scored 43 against Kentucky in 99. So you have to go all the way back to 99 to find it's the third lowest since that game out in St. Louis. So pretty impressive defensive performance. Kentucky did what it needed to do in terms of coming out and seizing control of the game early. You don't want to let a 15, a 16, a 14 seed get some confidence. It happened to Michigan State yesterday with Bradley, and Michigan State had a fight for the entire afternoon. Kentucky jumped out 18-3, never looked back, and now will face Wofford, which was in a real shootout with Seton Hall until the final few minutes. Wofford got hot, went on a streak, like it was 16 or 17-0 run, and beat Seton Hall 84-68. So it is a team that is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country that Kentucky will face here on Saturday. Game time set for about 2:40 in the afternoon on Saturday here after the Maryland-LSU game in Jacksonville. Obviously, a lot of the discussion is on P.J. Washington on the Kentucky side, and it certainly doesn't sound like you should expect to see him play tomorrow. But he hasn't been definitely ruled out yet. The one thing that Calipari has said is that there's no fracture. And if there's not a fracture, then one would assume that it's an issue of inflammation and pain, and then you're talking about time. And they're going to maximize the treatment options more than you and I would get if we had a similar issue. So his recovery isn't likely to take as long as a regular situation would, but still, it's going to, one would think, could take some amount of time, and it probably varies from individual to individual, but I think from all everybody's saying, what they're doing is trying to keep him from putting any weight on that foot to give it the best chance to heal as soon as it can. So keep your fingers crossed for PJ. As we speak, UK football's Pro Day is getting underway over at the Joe Kraft Center, and they're live streaming that at ukathletics.com with Dick Gabriel, Jeremy Jarman, and Avery Williamson on the coverage. So you can tune that in while you listen to us. Reports say Alabama is negotiating a buyout with Coach Avery Johnson. I like him, don't know him well, but I like Coach Johnson, and I am especially sad about that news for John Pelfrey, the former Wildcat who's on the staff there at Alabama. Baseball, Kentucky has a big series at Kentucky Proud Park this weekend with 13th-ranked Texas A&M. And we had a question here from Mike about wanting some info on Nick Richards, who took a really hard spill late in the game, but Nick said afterward he was feeling fine. I would imagine he's got a nice bruise today. Looked like he landed on his left hip, when he hit the court. So at least maybe there's extra padding there for Nick. Links to the stories that we talk about, you can find them on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We're live in Jacksonville. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. When we come back, Coach Scott Padgett on the line.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Back in Jacksonville, and we go to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline and bring on Scott Padgett, former Wildcat, now the coach at Samford. Scott, let me first wish you a happy anniversary. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm sure it has something to do with winning something at Kentucky.
21 years ago today against the Dukies.
Yeah, I
brings back a good memory. Brings back a good memory, right?
No doubt about it. Hopefully this team can make a real run right here and have some of their own memories.
How often do people still bring that day up to you?
Probably several times a week. It sounds funny.
Really? Okay.
Like, I did a radio show 2 days ago, and here in Birmingham, even, and a caller called in, and that's the question they asked was how it felt hitting the shot against Duke. So yeah, it gets brought up a lot. And then, you know what? And to be honest with you, that's kind of one of those things. Like you do this for those lifelong memories. I mean, they're not gonna, you're not gonna play forever, but trying to have that lasting memory is kind of one of the reasons you like to play the game.
Interesting you say it, because I was talking to Reed Travis in the locker room the other day. There was a group of us around him at one of the media sessions, and he said he came to Kentucky, yes, to better position himself to perhaps play in the NBA, but he said more than that, it was to get to play in this tournament for the first time, because he'd never had a chance to do that. And he said 40 years down the road, and I think I can't remember the exact quote, but something 40 years later in life, I want to have memory of playing in this tournament. And so, you kind of forget that, that's part of it too, for all of these guys. And so I think Reed is really excited, and all these guys are, about playing in this for the first time.
Well, I mean, it is. It's something that, like I say, you'll remember forever, and it sticks with you. It sticks with the people that, the fans of your team. So it is one of those things that 40 years from now, I promise you, if they make that magical run and win a championship, people are still going to be talking about him. He's still going to have those memories.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Wofford team that Kentucky's going to play. You encountered them twice. I was looking here at KenPom.com. Back on the 24th of January, this must have been quite a game. 107-106 in overtime. Wofford got you guys by one. But so you saw them twice. Give me some thoughts on Wofford and what makes this team as good as it is.
Well, first of all, they're a veteran team. They've all played together for, I think their point guard's a sophomore. But, like most of these guys have been there, 3-4 years together, so they know each other inside and out. They're a physical team, and usually when you hear from our level, you probably don't think of that, especially with them, because they're a three-point shooting team. But they have four bigs, and what makes them a good matchup for high major teams and things like that they're going to see in the tournament is they can rotate four bigs, keep them fresh, and they're all, big, strong guys that can battle with, the high major bigs. They're also physical, and you'll see it during the game, and I'm sure Kentucky fans will probably go nuts during this game, because on drives, they do something, and it's a technique. They've been doing it for 7 years that I've been in this league, is when you get alongside of them, they foul you with their lower body. They get up, and they kind of push you with their lower body and show their hands. They don't get called for fouls. You see that by them. They only give up about 15 free throws a game, 16 free throws a game to teams. So they play without fouling or being called for a foul because they show their hands. Their bigs can really be physical and rebound the ball. I think they're a plus like 6.5 on the boards, which at our level, that's a huge number, you know, because they've also played up and played some bigger schools a lot during the non-conference. And then they shoot the ball ridiculously. I mean, they're almost 42% from the three-point line. They're 49% from the field. You know, there's a misleading thing where they're 70% free throw shooting team, but the guys who shoot most of them, McGee, Hoover, Storm Murphy, those guys, I mean, they all shoot 85 and up. Their bigs don't shoot it that great, so they kind of brought the percentage down, but they really don't have a lot of weaknesses. I think the one thing that, you know, like I would say Kentucky really needs to focus on the offensive end, they struggle a little guarding penetration, and because of that, they pack it in. They kind of keep it packed tight. And what they want you to do is, you know, not be able to penetrate, pass the ball around the perimeter, and take quick contested jump shots. And if you fall into that trap of shooting jump shots, or especially early in the clock without working it in and to your advantage of in the paint, that's where they really thrive. And so you can make jump shots against them, and you can take them against them, but you can't, you know, 10 seconds into possession shoot a challenge jump shot against them, because you're just feeding into what they want. But they're very, very well coached. Mike Young is as good a coach as there is in the country, X and O wise. You know, probably doesn't have that name because of being in the Southern Conference for as long as he has, but can really, really coach. They're very disciplined. They're a really good ball club. I mean, they've won 21 games in a row. They've got 30 wins. They're not just a good mid-major. They're a good basketball team.
Interesting, comment about the drives and the lower body contact, because, you know, Kentucky's averaging lately under 15 three-point attempts a game. They're going to be attacking the basket, so they're going to have to finish through that contact, right?
Yeah, they're going to have to finish through it and not get frustrated by it, just keep playing through it. And I think one of the things that a key for them in the game is, I think early, like, they got to get the ball inside to Reed Travis against Cam Jackson. Cam Jackson, all their bigs are good players, but Cam Jackson's the guy that they can throw it into in the post, and he can get buckets. And he had 28, I think, not this year, but last year against Carolina when they beat him at North Carolina. And he is a big-time low post scorer. And they're a different team. I don't know if you paid attention to the game last night when Seton Hall really made their run to finally take the lead in the second half. It was when Cam Jackson picked up his third foul. So what happens is, all right, he's out of the game. Now you know they're shooting jump shots. You can get there and contest them a little better because you don't have to worry about the low post, you know, the ball going in there and getting buckets. So they're just a totally different team when he's on the floor. Plus, he's the best defender rebounder on the team as well. So I think going into Reed Travis and establishing him in there early would be key. And if you can draw some fouls on him, and he is a foul-prone guy, if you can draw some fouls on him, it's a different team. And that doesn't mean they're not good without him, but it's a different team with him out of the game.
It sounds like what you were talking about defensively sounds a little bit like Virginia. Is that accurate?
I would say there's some similarities. You know, they do. I wouldn't say he would call it a pack line or anything, but they do. This year more than any, like, he's had some guys in the past that could guard penetration there at Wofford, and I think they probably spread out a little more in the past. This team, if they do have a weakness, it's guarding penetration. At their place, when we had the overtime game, I've got a little point guard that's probably one of the quicker players in the country, and he kind of was able to get in the lane and make people commit and hit guys for wide open threes, and we were able to knock some shots down. And the more we knocked them down, the more that defense started to stretch out. And then he was able to beat them off the drive and get to the rim. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, if you'll shoot good ones, because I think if Kentucky shoots good three-pointers, they'll make them, you know. If you shoot good ones and you start to make shots and start to get that defense opened up, I think that that lane will be open for you know, Ashton Hagans and Emmanuel Quickley and Keldon Johnson and Hero to be able to drive it more. And if they drive it, I think it leads to, even if it doesn't lead to a make, it leads to offensive rebound and putbacks and things like that. So I think the one of the keys is just not taking bad threes. Take good ones, and when they take good ones, they, like I say, Kentucky usually shoots a pretty good percentage, but just not settling early.
For you and getting into coaching, I think it was just the Cal's first year that you were here, but what do you remember about it being an aspiring coach and what you gained and learned in that year that helped fashion the coach you are now?
Well, I think one of the things I learned from Cal is, and I've learned it, kept learning it over the years from him, even though I haven't been there, he adapts. You know, and I think the way the team makeup usually is with a lot of new coming guys, he adapts really well. So, like, you know, when he first came there and we had Wall and, you know, Cousins, Bledsoe, that group, it was dribble drive. Everything was dribble drive like he came from Memphis with. And if you look at, you know, over the years, he went from dribble drive to a lot of dribble handoff pin downs for, like, the Brandon Knight teams. Then he went to started going to some pick and roll with the Harrison twins, to where now, you know, he's doing pick and roll. He's getting the ball into the post, you know? So, like, I think he's learned to adapt based on the roster he has made up. And it's one of those things. I think when I first thought about being a coach, my idea was I was going to play almost, you know, kind of like we did when I was a player at Kentucky under Coach Pitino, is that we were going to press and do this and do that. And sometimes your roster dictates that you can, and sometimes you can't, and you got to be able to adapt to the situation. This year, we probably, you know, I pressed a lot my first 4 years. This year, we probably pressed less than we ever have because I had a 7-foot center that you could throw the ball into and get baskets down low, and he wasn't great for the press. But he was really good for us because he shot 60% on the year, and he led the league in block shots and I think second or third in rebounding. So he was a big time player for us. But I don't think he fit the press. So I think one of the things is just learning to adapt, and then just how he interacts with the players. Like, I mean, people only get to see Cal on the sidelines where, you know, he's acting a nut over there, you know, coaching every play, which is great. But there's another side to him that interacts with the players off the court, and it's why he can yell and scream and do everything, and the guys will still play hard for him. And I think those are the two things I would say I took the most from him, is how he interacts, and those guys know he loves them and cares for them, and he'd run through a wall for them, and in turn they do it for him as well. And then just being able to adapt to the roster.
Got to run. I appreciate the time so much. This was really great stuff, and we'll see you down the road. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
That is former Wildcat national champion Scott Padgett joining us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. Really, really good stuff there on Wofford. We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs from Jackson.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
More reports coming out about the Bryce Drew news, including one that's pretty official from the Vanderbilt Athletics Twitter account, that Bryce Drew will not return as their head coach for the next season. So that's two openings now, apparently, in the SEC. Well, I guess that's not technically at the moment, but the reports say that it's about to happen at Alabama with Avery Johnson. Mike DeCourcy joins us from SportingNews.com at TSN Mike on Twitter. So a couple of SEC schools are getting ahead of the game.
Well, that's one way of putting it, though, Tom. I mean, I don't know that I would use that phraseology. You know,
in the hiring process, I guess I'm thinking is like they're going to get to the front of the line for the shopping.
Yes, you know, I knew that the Alabama thing was coming. It was likely to come, and so I'm not surprised at all by that. But I have to say that Vanderbilt's decision ranks with, you know, I've been doing this over 30 years, and I'd have to really think back to, okay, what was more shocking than that? But it would definitely rank with the most shocking dismissals in my time covering college basketball, and that takes you back to when Danny Manning was a player. And now he's, you know, now he's on the verge of, actually he's getting another year at least at Wake Forest. I can't believe that they're doing this. I mean, you're talking about coming off a year when you signed two top 15 players, and okay, so one of them gets hurt and your year goes down the drain, and you make a decision immediately. I'm astonished.
We'll move on from that because we don't have any speculation yet about who the successors are going to be. Just get back into the tournament. We'll start with Kentucky, and what was your take on how they looked last night? How much we got to see of it without P.J. Washington, and a thought on the matchup with Wofford if he's not available.
Well, they looked fine. They looked very good, but I mean the opposition was not what you're going to get on Saturday. Wofford is a really gifted team. They are together. They know how to play. They are extraordinarily well coached. They shoot the basketball amazingly well, and they have a really good big guy in the middle. And so, and they have a complimentary big guy. So they're not physically overwhelmed in matchups against high major teams the way sometimes teams at that level can be. And so you can't count. You certainly have the ability to be more physically assertive in the post than perhaps they do because you have more guys to do it, but you're not going to, for the most part, overwhelm them physically underneath. Now, Reed is extraordinarily strong, so I mean, it's not what I'm saying is not that they have somebody as strong as Reed. They have someone who is very capable down there, but he's going to have to deal with somebody whose physicality is unusual to him, that he's not seen a Reed Travis before because there aren't very many of them out there, if any, aside from him. But you're going to have to be really adept at defending screens, really strong on the perimeter in terms of making sure that when you get through the screen, you're disciplined with your challenge but still effective. You don't. Last night, for instance, McGee got at least one for Fletcher McGee, who's their best shooter and the all-time leading three-point shooter in terms of makes in NCAA history. He had one four-point play because of indiscipline in a closeout, and you don't want to give him those kinds of opportunities because those can be real game changers. It's going to be a challenge to if PJ's unable to play, and it seems that's the way we're headed. It'll be a real challenge because he's such an effective defender and he's another option you can use to deal with McGee. But it's also at the offensive end what PJ means to the Wildcats and how he offers a complement to the perimeter attack. I mean, he can make threes himself, but I mean, you always have that when he's in the game. You always have that ability to throw it inside to him and have him, you know, turn and score. And I think that you would have the opportunity with PJ in the matchup against Aluma that he probably would be the player to defend him to take it outside and try to go by him to try to post him. He's posted better defenders than Wofford's second big, and so you'd have so many different ways that you could score. Now, you know, you have to depend on one, maybe pushing the pace a little, but Wofford's not uncomfortable in a high pressure or a high speed game. They're not uncomfortable in that. I mean, they can go and score 80. They did it last night. You have to be able to find other ways to get baskets beyond just, you know, what PJ is able to offer, and that they haven't had to do that very often. I mean, last night, yes, but I don't think that's what you're looking at tomorrow. It's not the same level of opposition.
From a listener, Shane, he says, with Wofford's ability to spread the court with their shooting, do you think Kentucky would go with a smaller lineup for perimeter defense where Keldon would be at the four? Could that be something that might be a good tactic for Cal?
You know, I think that's an option, and you'd have two ball handling guards on the floor then. That certainly would be something that you would be able to do. But it's also, and of course, because PJ has been so reliable in terms of playing time, you could say, well, you know, you're changing to match with, the opponent, and you're Kentucky. Do you really want to change? But in a sense, I mean, not having PJ, you're changing anyway. I watched the one thing I was a little disappointed in last night, and I didn't see his final numbers, but I saw EJ turn down opportunities last night, and my feeling was that in this circumstance with no PJ, I mean, if you're going to be out there, you got to take those chances because you're essentially filling in for the leading scorer, and so you have to be able to be confident that you can do that, and so. If he's going to turn down opportunities, I mean, a lot of times what people don't realize is if you run an offense and you get an open shot and you don't take it, it can often manufacture itself into a turnover. The next thing you know, the offense is hamstrung, the clock's going down, it either goes off or you wind up with a travel or a missed pass that, goes out of bounds because now you're forcing things, and we talked about that some with Ashton early in the year, exactly. And we don't see that now. I mean, he understands. But last night, I saw EJ turn down opportunities that didn't necessarily turn into turnovers, but because Abilene Christian wasn't able to string that to its natural conclusion, but a capable opponent would, and so I do see where. Maybe trying something different might be worthwhile, but I don't think they'll start there. I think they'll start with, presuming PJ is unavailable, I think they'll start with the guys who would ordinarily replace him and then move in another direction if it seemed necessary.
We're talking with Mike DeCourcy. It's sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter. You see him on the Big Ten Network as well. What are you doing on Big Ten Network around the tournament? Anything different?
Actually, I won't have any obligations BTN-wise unless they have a team reach the Final Four. We have a number of analysts who are Chicago-based, so it's obviously not cost. It's not cost-effective to bring me in when sure. Terrific guys like Sean Morris and John Crispin are right there.
Let's get to a break. Mike DeCourcy will be right back with us. He's joining us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. I want to talk about a story he's got up at sportingnews.com, talking to coaches anonymously about defending Zion Williams. And we'll get to that. Talk a little bit about one of the stars of the first day of the tournament, the guard from Murray State. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Back with Mike DeCourcy on the Kentucky Branded Hotline from SportingNews.com. And one of the big stories yesterday was the star guard from Murray State, John Morant, a triple-double. And he certainly announced himself to the nation. If you were a serious college basketball fan, you were already familiar with him. But this was announcement on a big stage for him.
I've been doing this for a long time, as I mentioned before, and I don't remember a team losing a first round game from a seed spot like Marquette and getting totally ignored. I mean, no one's talking about the fact that Marquette lost that game. All they're talking about is Ja.
And I don't think anybody picked
great.
Them.
It's great that that Ja was so brilliant and what's also being overlooked is how good his teammates were. And I wrote about Ja's triple-double, but I pointed out that, when you have a triple-double, you need a lot of help because you don't get 16 assists if nobody's making baskets. Somebody's got to make 16 baskets. And honestly, because of Shaq Buchanan, the OVC Defensive Player of the Year, Shaq didn't have to guard Marcus Howard. He was able to play a lesser offensive player and deal just with making sure that guys didn't get open shots. And and Shaq Buchanan handled the hard work of defending Marcus Howard and did a great job. Marcus was 9 of 27 from the field, so that worked out great. And then on the baseline, Murray State's two big guys just owned Marquette's bigs. They were terrific. So it was a total team performance. And Ja was amazing. He was terrific. He's a wonderful player, a really exciting player. And it's always interesting when you see, you know, a game like that in which he was so good, and then all of a sudden people are trying to shift the narrative about Zion Williamson. You know, don't be so quick to say he's going to be the number one overall pick and things like that. And I'm like, look, Ja is pretty amazing, but there's no question Zion's going to be the number one overall pick. That is not going to change.
No, and that segues into a story you've got at sportingnews.com. And you can get some interesting insight when you use the technique of talking to a source and anonymously to get some insight on something they don't want to necessarily say about a rival. So you talk to coaches about how to defend Zion Williamson. What were some of the interesting things you found?
Yeah, you know, when I did that, I mean, it's not like I'm asking them to say that, you know, he's a bad kid or whatever,
right.
And they wouldn't. But, I mean, I'm not looking for that. I'm just looking for strategic insight that they wouldn't share because they don't want to offend Coach K or because they potentially, in some circumstances, might have been able, you know, in position to play them again, although obviously it's unlikely in a tournament setting. And so I gave them all this, you know, all this cover, so to speak, for them to say anything they wanted, and what they mostly said were nice things. I mean, he's so impressive that most of what they said was, "Wow, he's really good." And so, you know, they talked about the need to not give him space for one. If you back off him and say, "Okay, be a 3-point shooter," it's a mistake. Because he understands he has a really high basketball IQ, and he understands how to use that space to his advantage. And so their position is you can't do that. Now what they want you to do is they want you to give that space to the other Duke players. Maybe not so much Alex O'Connell, but dare the other guys to be shooters, and make them beat you. And as we saw in the Syracuse game, when, of course, the Orange played the zone, Jack White went 0 for 10 from 3, that kind of thing. That's what they want you to do. They feel like when Zion is anywhere near the lane, he has to have multiple bodies on him or you're in trouble. They want you to make him be a passer, but they want you to try to make the targets of his passes the lesser offensive players on Duke's team. And there are a few of those. I mean, as long as you don't allow Javon Delorier to be, like, in the post open. I mean, but if you get him out to the short corner or somewhere like that, they're good with that. Again, the 3-point shooters that they have, their feeling is that you dare them to shoot. And if they have a day like they did against Virginia on the road, I think they were 12 of 26 that day, I had one coach say, look, if they make threes, you're not beating them. It's not going to happen. And then the other thing that was interesting was the idea of getting him into foul trouble. One coach told me that you probably aren't going to get him into foul trouble defensively with him as a defender, but you can get him into foul trouble on offense if you find a guy willing to stand in there against his 285 pounds. And there have been a few, if you've watched them play, there have been a few circumstances when guys made what we call business decisions and got out of the way.
Yeah. I remember this goes way back when people made those business decisions against a guy named James Lee in the late 70s at Kentucky when he was out on the break. About a minute left. Real quickly, back to this game tomorrow. Fletcher McGee, does he remind you of anybody you've covered?
No, because he's a catch-and-shoot guy. I mean, that's his main thing. But he does it differently than anybody I've seen. Most catch-and-shoot guys, you know, they're going to catch open, facing the goal, feet set, and go up. I mean, once they get the catch, that's... But he will catch as he's turning around the screen. And it makes it much more difficult to get in on him. And so you have to think about how you defend him, because he literally can catch as he comes around the screen and turn into the shot. I've never seen it before. And it's and he's very accurate with it. I mean, it's not perfect. He's going to miss some of those, but he makes a lot. And so if you're trailing the screen, you're out. I mean, you've got to think about hedging every time he's using a screener, because if you're using the technique of trailing the screen, he turns into that shot as he catches the ball, and he can make that shot. So it does force you to reconsider how you defend him as he runs around screens.
Mike DeCourcy, thank you much. Enjoy the games today.
Okay, thanks very much, Tom.
Mike DeCourcy, he'll be back with us next Friday when hopefully we'll be talking about a Kentucky matchup in the Sweet 16. One more break to get to. We'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report from Jacksonville. Just a bit, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Hamburg and in the Palomar Center. Donato Slice of Wildcat History. We mentioned this earlier with Scott Padgett. It's the anniversary of Kentucky's 86-84 win over Duke in the South Regional Final over in St. Petersburg. And this was also the day in 75 that Kentucky beat Indiana to punch its ticket to the Final Four, 92-90. Happy birthday to Wayne Turner, star of that 98 win over Duke. Also, a former Wildcat, Bobby Watson, was born on this day. Our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week is the Louisiana Derby coming up tomorrow at the fairgrounds in New Orleans. War of Wills, the big favorite in there, and he looks awfully tough to beat. If you want to shop for a price, try Sueno. From Keith DeSormo's barn, this horse looks like he's getting better, as DeSormo's horses often do with each start, and might be able to get War of Will at a price tomorrow. Enjoy the games. We'll be back to talk about them on Monday.
Tom Leach, KY.com, whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email